Welcome everyone to Know Thy Brand podcast, the branding podcast for women in business. Welcome everybody to Know Thy Brand podcast, a podcast that tackles gender inequality through the brand lens. From brand strategies to marketing tactics, from female leadership to female entrepreneurship, from corporate brand to personal brand, every episode is designed to inspire you and to support you in a journey for success, whatever success means to you. Hi, everyone. Today we have with us Hayley. Hayley is a freelancer. She is very special to me because when I started with the social enterprise and I turned Know Thy Brand into the Know Thy Brand Women, the social enterprise, Hayley, who is the wife of an old friend of my husband, kindly volunteered to take part in our focus group that helped us define the requirements that our audience had and provided a number of insights that I can't even thank you enough. It was fantastic. It was a great session. And at the time, we didn't even know each other, really. I just follow what Hayley was doing on social media, because obviously, thanks to our husbands, we connected. I was very impressed, but we didn't know each other. And now that I got the chance to know a bit more about Hayley, I thought that inviting her was absolutely a must, because many women are considering a career as a freelancer, and I think they can learn a lot from the experience that Hayley had and us. So thank you, Hayley, for being with us today.
Oh, hi, Julia. Thanks so much for having me. I was really touched that you asked me to be interviewed today. So thank you.
Oh, thank you. Honestly, I, as I said, I've been following your career for what I can do via social media. And I've really been impressed. That's why I asked Sean to put us in contact. So thank you. Let's start a bit with your background, though, because our audience doesn't know you. So can you tell us a bit about you, where you come from, where you're now, so jealous, and what you do?
Yeah, sure. So as you said, I'm Hayley. I'm in my sort of 30s-ish. When I finished my degree, I lived in Paris and did a French degree over there. So when I finished my degree, which I absolutely loved, I loved Paris. What do you do now with a languages degree? I was a bit stumped about that. The decision to go to university and do languages was definitely a heart and not a head decision. I was very, very lucky growing up that my parents were never kind of drilling me to decide what career I was going to do. They just wanted me to go and make myself happy and do what I wanted. It did then mean that, yeah, I had no idea what to do. I didn't have a lot of money. I fell in love with a boy back in England, because there's always a boy, isn't there, somewhere in the story. So I moved to London, where I'm from Manchester originally. So going from, you know, Manchester, Paris, London, it wasn't that different kind of going from one city to another. But London is a very expensive city. So it was, I planned to do a master's. I was desperate to become a translator eventually, after a while, and I thought about it, but I just couldn't afford to do the master's. So I thought, you know, I'll get a job and I'll save up. Any old job will do. So I started working in facilities management. Why? I can see you pulling a face as I say that. Yeah, I don't know. I'm sure that for some people it's their dream job. It was fine. You know, I worked with a great team and they were fantastic, but definitely not the job I wanted to do. That sort of pattern of just working in jobs that were fine but not brilliant, it repeated itself for quite a number of years. And I eventually ended up in philanthropy fundraising. So fundraising over the past, I'd say 10, 15 years, has become more and more professional than it used to be. It's not just sort of rattling a bucket outside train stations anymore. You know, there are whole degrees for it. There are very, very, very specific training courses. It's very specialised now. I was very lucky quite early on in my fundraising career to start working at Great Ormond Street Hospital charity. Obviously, Great Ormond Street Hospital for Children, some international listeners might not have heard of the might not have heard of the hospital. They're based in London, do an incredible amount of research and care for children right through from neonatals to into teens, from all sorts of different rare disorders. I loved it. I absolutely loved it. And I worked on and off there for about 10 years, but it still wasn't right. There just was something not quite right. And you mentioned my husband, Sean, before, and he is an incredible man, really supportive, and was just like, it's driving me mad seeing you not quite happy. Please go and do that master's in translation. So I did. You know, I was very lucky that he was able to support me through that. We are a team. We work together. I decided to do full time for 1 year. So I went back to university in my early 30s wow. with a load of 24-year-olds studying my master's. It was the best year. I got so much out of it, and I'm so glad that I just threw myself into it. So I am now a translator. I'm a qualified translator. I left university and became self-employed right away. I translate from French and Spanish into English, and also Portuguese now. So I know you mentioned that. Sorry, I've been talking for ages. I will try and fast forward a little bit.
No, it's fine. It's perfect. You're covering some of the question I had, so that's totally fine. Go ahead.
Yeah, but it's not supposed to be a monologue, is it? You're supposed to be interviewing me, so I'm sorry.
No, it's fine. Honestly, it's very interesting. So please go ahead. Honestly,
we now live in Lisbon in Portugal. So we moved here last year. Obviously, being freelance means that was very easy to do. I've just come over here and I'm working here now. I still do some philanthropy consultancy for charities as well.
I saw that in the piece. It's good that you explain what is your background, because I got to be confused on your social media pages, and I was like, how does that fit all together?
Exactly. Well, and actually, there are loads of synergies between. There tends to be, if you work in the charity sector, you meet people, obviously, like any sector. When you get talking to them, you realise how many language graduates there are in fundraising. And I think there's two sides to each story. I think the first bit is a bit like me when I said I graduated and went, oh God, what do I do now? Then you end up working in it. But personally, I think it's also because people that work in fundraising, you have to be a great communicator, because you have to be able to build those relationships with people. And I think people that have learnt other languages, that have lived in another country and culture, you get that flexibility of communication that you really need in fundraising as well.
I think that's a very good point to make about communication and being able to, adapt and understand the other point of view, because you lived in different countries, because you had to learn a different language and really force your brain to work in a different way. Okay, you mentioned one of the benefits of being a freelancer is to being able to move and go wherever you want, whenever you want. But when you started, so you got your master's and you're ready and you're like, what do I do now with your strong, now you know you have the confidence, you know you can do it. Why you didn't consider at all a career working as a translator for a company, for someone, and decide to go independent straight away? Was an easy decision, or was, well, tell us.
It was a really easy decision for me. And it's interesting you asked that question, because I can't kind of pinpoint the moment when I decided that was what I wanted to do. We, as a couple, Sean and I had always said that we wanted to live abroad again. We both lived abroad separately before and wanted to have that experience together. And his job is, he's a teacher, so it's quite movable. As long as he can find a job in another country, then that's fine. But my work, previously working in fundraising, it wasn't only England-based, it was quite London-based. There are regional branches of charities throughout the UK, but it all tends to happen in London, for better, for worse. I'm not saying that's the way that it should be. But we didn't want to be in London forever. We knew that we wanted to travel, and I couldn't see personally a way of being able to do that without going freelance. It's also important to say that my parents have their own company, and throughout my childhood and teenage years and beyond, that's always been a big part of my life. You know, my mum has always had her own business, and she has been her own boss, and I've seen how happy that's made her. I do remember when she had a salaried position and the change between her previous life, in inverted commas, and then becoming self-employed and all of that. And it has only ever been a positive. So I was quite sure that that was what I wanted to do eventually. I think we all have at some point in our lives this kind of grand idea of what being self-employed might look like. But I think because of my mum being around, I hopefully had a bit more of a realistic view of it.
And you didn't have any fear at all? Because personally, when I started, like Henning, my husband, being very supportive, has been telling me for years that I should have started my own business. And I was like, nah, it's not gonna happen. No, I like the salary. I like, you know, the stability. I hated everything else. No, it's an exaggeration. But in the last few years, I was not happy with the way things were going. And he was like, just start. And I had so many fears, and it really took me a big, you know, to start my own business.
Yeah, and so it's terrifying. No, it is. And so, yeah, of course, I had hesitation. I mean, the big thing was the salary. Let's be honest. It is really scary. Mind. Also, I was a little bit worried about being on my own in a room all day long. At the time, I thought that I quite enjoyed the office life and going in and having a chat with people, but actually, and I don't know, Julia, whether you've ever done a Myers-Briggs assessment or anything similar to that about your personality type, but I had done one a few years ago, and actually the results were quite surprising but completely spot on for me. And actually it showed that how much of an introvert I am, not in the sense of I'm quiet, because I don't think I'm not particularly quiet. I will go and talk to anybody and everybody, but that's not how I draw my energy. How I draw my energy is having downtime and relaxing and kind of going internally. And I think that that's the best way to describe it.
That's a very important point because I didn't know I was an introvert for years, because I'm like people see me as an extrovert, so I go out, I chit chat, so, and myself, I also thought that I didn't see myself as an introvert. And then I discovered that being an introvert, it doesn't mean going out or going or staying at home. It means where you, exactly what you said, where you draw your energy is by being with other people, or is by you being yourself. And that's when it hit me. I was like, of course, that's what I need. I need my time. Now I really make an effort to cut for myself like an hour where I just go for a walk, or I go on trips. I was telling you, I've been on trips on my own. I just need to be on my own to recharge, while other people recharge by being surrounded by other people. That's the difference. Yeah. It's not how much you want to go out or how much you prefer to stay home. It's where you find your energy. So that's in that we are very similar. But so continuing, so you, once you discover that you are an introvert, working.
It wasn't until then I started doing the masters and I was at home or in the library on my own studying a lot, where I was like, you know what, I love this. I love this so much. And it's sometimes about not having those distractions. You know, I'd never dealt very well with if I had a big report to do in an open plan office and then someone would come over going, can I just ask you? I hated that. I really hated that. But being on my own in the quiet, I love it.
I totally understand that. Although there are times, for instance, in my profession where I feel that I need to be around other people. You know, I work in a creative space, and being around people is very important for me to get other ideas, other ways of see things. And that's where I go in a share office. And it's very important for people that are listening to us and are considering a career in freelancing to know that you will spend some time alone, but that's not all the other options available for you. But it's definitely, there's going to be times of being alone and you need to prepare for that. Now, there is another challenge that I'm thinking of. I don't know if you've explored yet, but I discovered that over the years, you don't have an IT person. You know, when you're in, in the office.
Totally. Yeah.
Yeah. And you're like, my computer doesn't work. Can anybody come and fix it? And you complain because they take an hour or a day. And now you're like, it's okay. Even take 1 week. Just come and fix it.
I know. I know. And it's so true. It's made me realize. I don't know. Oh, God, this is going to sound not very, modern, but it made me realize that how much more capable I am than I thought I was with things to do with technology. You know, I have had to set up everything myself, and yes, it might have taken time, but the sense of achievement is huge, isn't it, when you do manage to figure it all out. I know you were just showing me, Julia, your fancy new microphone and everything, so it must have been a similar feeling for you when you managed to get a really complicated piece of kit to work for you.
Absolutely. So we had the fears, but then you decide that was the way forward and you never look back, if I get it correctly.
Yeah, that's right. I think actually one of the other fears that I forgot to mention before was starting from the very beginning again. You know, that scared me quite a lot. I wasn't particularly senior within my roles in charities, but you know, I'd met people, I was at a certain point in my career where I was heading in a certain direction, and then the idea of being at the bottom of the ladder again was really scary, because it was a complete career change for me as well. I'm sure there will be a lot of other women out and people out there that are considering not just going freelance in their own the job that they've been doing for years and years, but also a complete career change, and that's scary.
That's very true. I never considered, because when I went freelance, I mean, when I started my company, it wasn't in the same field. I've been working with marketing and branding for forever. But that's a very good point. Like you really had to start from scratch on a new field. So let's really talk about the benefits. So for you, now that you're, you took the decision, you went ahead, and if someone is listening to us, we're sharing this experience because it's important to know that, as you said, having a realistic picture, you know, it's like maternity. Everybody absolutely tells you that is absolutely fantastic, everything was gonna be, and then you start and you're like, why nobody told me about this? I mean, it's fantastic, but it would have been nicer if someone had warned you that there are also downside and pitfall. And that's what we want to do here, is really provide as much as possible a clear picture of what is to be a freelancer, knowing that Hayley loves it, and so we recommend it, or it's definitely something you should consider, but be aware that there are some fears. Amazing. At the beginning, things that you need to deal with. And now I'd like to ask you, for now that you're established, what are the main benefits, but also if you have found any pitfall along, you know, the way, so that again, sure, to give a concrete picture of the situation.
Yeah, I mean, for me, living here in Lisbon is the main benefit, and I'd be able to move around and work from wherever they like anyway. But certainly that's the benefit for me. It's just transformed both of our lives in a way that we haven't thought possible. I have had mental health struggles in the past. And being here and having the sun and all of that, you know, it sounds really corny, but I think that many of us listening to this will recognize, even if we don't have mental health struggles, just how much having some sunny weather, blue sky, makes such a difference to your day, and to your general mood, you know, all of that. So having that in the background and know, like feeling the sun coming in and everything, it's lovely. I liked living in London, but the grey sky does get a little bit tiresome after a while. So that's the main plus for me. And also, oh God, I sound like such a cliche. This is the cliche that my husband believes, that from working for yourself from home, that I can, if I want to have a break to do some yoga or go for a run or something, I can do that. And I absolutely love being able to do that too. And as long as I put some money to one side, I can take some holiday when I want to. Just make sure that clients know that I'm going away in advance, so that, you know, there's no surprises and things. So those are the, yeah, those are the three main things for me, really. The pitfalls along the way are coming back to moving abroad and figuring out an entire new tax system. God, this is going to be Hayley talking about tax for the whole interview.
Change the subject. It's not about freelancing. It's how you do your tax return.
I think the pitfall along the way has been I pay an accountant here. So I didn't expect that at the beginning. And I do feel like it's quite a big chunk out of my monthly salary, but it's a huge benefit for me. When you just said about tech and having a tech person on call, you know, if you needed them and then not having that, for me, it's having someone kind of look after the finances. I can do my own stuff, and I'm very good at budgeting for kind of the month ahead and all that kind of stuff. But when it comes to taxes, and here I go again, it just blows my mind. And especially being in a brand new country, you have to. So in the UK, for example, you do a yearly tax return. Here in Portugal, it's quarterly. And I never knew that until I moved here. So having an accountant being able to handle that for me it's worth its weight in gold. So
that's an important topic. You touched first of all, I would like to really to thank you for being open about having mental struggles, because we try not to talk about this. There is this thing where when we have problems, we don't talk about it. And I'm really trying to change this. Now, I didn't have that kind of struggles, but you know, I try if you see my post, I really try to show that it's not, yeah, you know, on social media you see always the happy face, always the you know, the successful, you know, but there are things that go behind the scene that we tend not to talk about. And then really everybody that experienced that feels alone, because they think that they are the only people experiencing. And I am, like, for instance, I'm very open about having miscarriages, because when it happened to me, I was really lonely, and I don't want any other woman to go through that, because it's not fun at all. And, you know, and so first of all, I really want to thank you for being so open about it, because is it something that happens and we deal with it?
And that's right. And so many, you know, you don't have to be, I am on medication, and it's almost like I take my hay fever tablet as well. You know, I take an antidepressant. So what, it helps, you know, it's health, but you don't have to be in that position of needing either medical support or anything. You don't need to have been diagnosed with something. You know, we all have. I was listening to something, another podcast recently, about changing the narrative from mental health to mental fitness, because there's something about the compound term mental health that makes people go, oh, I don't have problems with my mental health. But we all, you know, we might go to the gym because we know that we need to keep fit. We might go for a walk, you know, all of that sort of thing. But we don't prioritize our mental fitness in quite the same way.
That's a very interesting point. We might have a podcast only on that, but I'm not joking, because it's a very different point of view. I've never been very aware of these things before. I don't know. I never met before people that experienced it, so I didn't quite know exactly what it was. But recently, there's been much more open talks about it. But I never heard about, never heard anybody talking about mental fitness, and it's a very good point. I'm sure we all experience days where we times where we really struggle. And maybe having, you know, support or something that we can do, like you go to the gym, you put weight on, what do? You cut your food and you go to the gym.
Exactly.
If there was something like that works for the brain, when something is misaligned and is not going the way you want, that would be brilliant. But if you do it, at the moment, you're right, it seems like you only have to be, you know, not well to get any attention or any support. Brilliant. I don't know where we're going with this, but I like it. So I could, but again, I work with my company. I started in Singapore, I moved to London, and then to Luxembourg. So there is that element of freedom that comes from,
exactly.
I love going for my walks. Like, I have my thing where I put all the emails onto a basket, and then I go for a walk, and I respond to all of my emails when I walk. So
nice.
That is,
yes.
So you're walking and you're walking, huh? Yeah. And you take the stuff, huh? And you take, and especially for me being outside, I really struggle. I don't know if I will ever be able to go back to a work where I need to sit all the time. Like after 3 hours, I get nuts. I need to get for a little, even if it's a 15 minutes, but you can't do it in the office. So there is all that. So if you are considering a freelancing career, I think the word free is really the best part. But I have a question. So you start your career, and I think that's what will stop everybody at the beginning. How do you find your clients? Because you said nobody, you start your new career, you're starting from scratch. Who is going to take you? Why they're going to take you? Can you give us a few tips on how to find your clients and how to make it work?
And obviously, like as I said before, I'm coming at it as a career changer as well. So it's almost like kind of you've graduated and you have to go down that career path again. And it can be pretty soul destroying. You know, we were lucky when I was at university to do my master's. So most recently, I was also doubly lucky that it was the year just before the pandemic hit. So I managed to have a normal, in inverted commas, experience at university. So we had a careers fair that was specifically for translators and interpreters, or the future translators and interpreters. So we had some agencies come in and visit, and you know, we talked to them, give our CVs over, that kind of thing. Agencies are not, it's really tough. I as well as my paid work, I also sit on the board of the Institute of Translating and Translation and Interpreting in the UK. And it comes up a lot about the fact that agencies are not very well regarded within the industry from a worker perspective. If you are a translator or interpreter, they don't tend to be very well respected. It's because there are some bad eggs out there who pay incredibly low rates and who will take advantage of the fact that someone's just left university, so you can pay them peanuts and they'll be grateful for the work. But there are also some really great agencies where they take some of the stress off you. Some of the stress that we've just discussed, I mean, yeah, they, you don't have the salary still, but you can get fairly regular work from them. They will go out and find the clients. So you're in that position as the kind of say as a translator, you're a service provider in a way. You've got a middleman to help go out and find that work for you. You also
can I stop you just 1 second, because you're talking about agencies for translators, but if anybody wants to start a career in any other field, there are similar solutions, and it's a good thing to do, bearing in mind what you said. So for instance, if you are a graphic designer or if you are a marketer, there are a lot of platforms that allow you to look for jobs through them. Yes. They are the middleman. But as you said, be very careful. This is a very important point. Be very careful the platform you choose, because some of them really take a complete advantage of your of you. They get paid very well while you get paid very little.
I don't know, Julia, whether something like this exists for, as you said, with marketing and branding, but there is it's almost like a social media for translators website where you can go on. It's called Pro, I never know how to pronounce it. It's Pro with a Z at the end. So like Pros, maybe, I suppose. They have a blue board that you can go onto. You can put in an agency name from anywhere throughout the world, and other translators will have rated their interactions with that agency. So whether it's about, you know, poor pay practices or general relationship with the project managers and things. So I don't know, you might have an idea whether there are other resources like that for other industries, but there probably are.
Yeah, there is Glassdoor that is used.
Yes, yeah.
But that's usually for big companies. But I check for instance, I had someone that wanted to reach out to me to offer me some freelancer to help me with my business. And I researched through them and I decided not to take them because they were, for me, they were basically underpaying their staff. Yeah. And I didn't want to have anything to do with that.
So that kind of resource can be invaluable because you don't waste your time. You don't waste your energies and anything else that might be very precious to you. So those kinds of things can be really good. I did start working with agencies primarily. I still work with some of them now, not all of them, and for many and very different reasons. I also, and again, coming back to, I don't want to be like, oh, my husband this, my husband that, but I appreciate how lucky I am to be in a supportive relationship where, as I said this before, we do work in a team. The fact that I might not bring in as much 1 month to the next, is it's okay. You know, we do have to have a discussion about that, and that makes you feel very grown up very quickly, but it has to happen. But I did also do, we were encouraged to do quite a lot of pro bono, you know, free work at the beginning, because it helps you to hone your skills a bit more. You build up contacts, of course, and that's begun to pay dividends for me. So recently I've been translating for free for a website that they're focusing on biodiversity. I always struggle a little bit with that word, and sustainability. And they've recently just got some funding, so they're now able to pay translators. So where I was doing work for free for them, I'm now being offered paid work. And that happens a lot. And I'm sure that happens a lot in all sorts of industries as well. If you can afford to do a little bit of free work on the side, it can end up in the end that you get some paid work out of it. So
yes,
that happened for me.
And also it helps you, as you said, to create connection, to build your you know, personal brand, which we're going to talk about in a second, or to develop and communicate your personal brand. And you know, you might actually find that it's very nice to put your expertise at use, like for a website that deals with something as important as biodiversity. So it's, I think it's definitely a step that we all have taken, bearing in mind that, of course, we need to make to the end of the month. But it's very important to be clear. What I like what you said is that if you share, if you have the chance to have another person in the family, you need to be clear about what is happening. And so having those grown-up conversations, it's important. And but it's better to have them than not to have them, and then at the end of the day being all stressed out because it was not clear or because their expectations are not met. Obviously, if you're alone, it's different because you will have to have this conversation with yourself.
Absolutely.
One thing I've done, for instance, with my business, I have a partner, but you know, now when I change my business from very successful, but a company worked very well, to a social enterprise, I had to give myself a certain number of time in which I know that the income will go down because obviously I'm, you know, renouncing to all of my existing clients pretty much and moving to a new sphere and a new space. But as what I've done for myself, which I encourage people who want to work for themselves to do, is to say, okay, for how long I can do this? At which point I'm going to be making a decision, and before that, at which point I'm going to start making changes, because I know that if I keep in this trajectory, I will hit the point where I have to give up. And it's very important to be realistic, because as much as we love what we do, you love the freedom, I love working on the social aspect of my business, but we have to be realistic. At the end of the day, we need to pay. I mean, there are the people that might do it, but for charity and anything, but that's, I mean, they don't need to be paid. But for the majority of us and the people that are listening to this podcast, we need to be realistic. Okay, so this is the budget we have.
Yeah.
And if there is someone else is impacted, like a partner, this is what is going to happen this month. And if it's just us, this is going to happen. How can I afford it?
Absolutely. And coming back to the kind of being realistic thing as well, And again, this is specific mainly for career changes. I intended to fully launch myself into a translation career. That was going to be all that I did. I didn't have in mind a portfolio career where I would be doing a bit of this and a bit of that. But that happened. And now I'm really glad that I did it. Like you said, it got to a point. I graduated or finished my course in the September. I'd said that if I haven't, and I'd set a target in mind of what I wanted to earn. It was modest, but just so that I had an idea of something to work towards. If I hadn't attained that by Christmas, I would have to look at other options. And that's exactly what happened. I did not earn as much as I thought I would do in that time. And it just as a kind of coming out of Christmas and New Year, it was just serendipity that a contact that I'd made through the charity sector previously knew somebody that was looking for a philanthropy consultant. And I thought, oh, okay, yeah, I'll give that a go just on the side to get some money. Gosh, nearly 2 years later, I'm still working with that charity. There's no looking back for me now. I love working with them. And it's a really nice, just a bit of a change in my working day. But if you are a career changer and you didn't absolutely hate what you were doing before, there is nothing wrong with keeping links in that area and doing the odd bit of work and being honest with yourself that that might be something that you need to do to supplement your income. And for me, it's gone beyond now supplementing my income. It is fully a part of my portfolio career. And I love it. So there are alternatives rather than just kind of going, oh God, if I don't earn enough, then I'll have to go back to working in an office. There are probably other things that you can do.
I love this. So let's recap the tips because we need to give practical tips. So you're going to have fear, but don't let the fear stop you. Shall we start with that?
Yeah.
The benefits are more than the pitfalls, I think, from what we've seen.
Absolutely. Yeah, completely.
When you start, try to find ways to have contacts with people and start to work in any shape and form you can in your field, if you can, so that you can start creating those contacts and also, you know, sharpen your expertise and grow your personal brand, which we're going to touch in a second. Then be realistic of what you need to make effectively with, you know, in terms of money, and consider other options before quitting, because things might not happen straight away, but that doesn't mean that you have to give up and say, okay, I tried, it didn't work, I go back. I love this
and with the pandemic, I mean, it's a cliche, isn't it? Everyone's been saying, the pandemic shows how unpredictable things are. But it's true. It's a cliche because it's true that things are unpredictable. And, you know, God forbid, your partner might lose their job. And so you might need to look at alternatives and things. It's always good to have a plan B without that plan B being the worst case scenario possible.
And also without making the plan B your plan A, because I remember at some point when I was working, no, but this is important, because when I was working at university, so I've been working at university as my, you do your philanthropy, I teach at university as my sidekick, okay? I love it. I really enjoy the experience of teaching. Mind you, over Zoom is not as quite as old teams we use, as interactive and as fulfilling as teaching in class, but I love teaching. And I love it so much that I got even qualification, I'm an EAI associate, like all of that. And it was so exciting. And the university at some point offered me a permanent role. And I was like, part-time. And I was like, I do it. And that was, again, we don't talk about husbands. We talk about husbands in this episode. I don't know what to say. But it was him.
We are modern, independent women.
I always say that it's not women against men, like equality is not, is we all work together. And in that case, my husband was pivotal because he said to me, yes, you can take that job, but be careful, because if you take that job, your plan B become your plan A. Yeah. You're not gonna have enough time. Even if they say it's part-time, you're not gonna have enough time to dedicate to another brand.
So true.
And it was tempting because it was something I love. Obviously, I will have constant, you know, influx. I didn't have to worry anymore how many clients I have this month, how many clients I have next month, and stuff like that. But if I had done that, unfortunately, I know that I would have ended up killing another brand. I'm so glad looking back. At the time, I remember when I had to pick up the phone and say, no, thank you. It was a bit hard.
Oh, yeah.
But I'm still teaching. I didn't close the door, never close doors if you can, especially if it's something. I still teach. I just didn't take that permanent role. I keep my independence. So, of course, there are days where you're like, I don't know what is going to happen tomorrow, but I got the chance to develop the brand the way I wanted. So use your plan B. It's very good to have a plan B. Just very important not to make your plan B becoming
very true. Yeah.
And now for the last two questions I have for you, because I realized
that. Okay.
So during the focus group, you talk about personal branding. Obviously, we are talking about branding. The focus group was about branding because that's what we do. Another brand. But you made a comment. It's like, freelancers could do with personal branding. And someone said, but I don't want to have a brand for myself because I'm an individual and I'm not a company. And that's where we started to separate branding as corporate versus personal branding. So why do you think that a freelancer needs a personal brand or to develop and to work on their personal brand?
Well, I think that as there's all sorts of different terms that are used. In the UK, we use sole trader, which sounds really ominous. I think in Portugal here, it's independent worker. You know, as a freelancer, you tend to just think of yourself as, oh yeah, I am a person and I do work for clients. Regardless of what your actual term is, you are a small business. Even if it's just one of you, you are a business. You're running a business. So I find it difficult to separate the idea that if somebody says, I always talk about the fact that I have a small business and people that, I mean, not so much these days, I don't know, dinner parties, haven't been to dinner parties for a long time now, but somebody might say, oh, but it's just you though, isn't it? It doesn't matter. You know, you are still offering services that therefore makes you a business. For me personally, my brand for my business is me, as you just said, and it's okay that brand is authenticity, is warmth, is all the things that I feel that I am or that I certainly strive to be. You can portray that image as you and your business, and that's okay to do that. And I think particularly in this day and age, authenticity, kindness, all those, they're all the buzzwords that are out there. I don't know whether you've heard of a lady called Mary Portas, who turned around multi-million pound businesses throughout her career. She's now championing this idea of the kindness economy. So she's recently written a book about the kindness economy. And I was watching a webinar with her the other day, and she's saying, you know, where certain businesses, and we're talking huge ones as well as small ones, where they're going to lag behind is if there's no realness behind what they're trying to put out there. You know, people, consumers connect with, well, actually that's the point. They connect in some way with you. It's not just a transaction anymore. You know, they've got to, I think, I can't remember the exact term that she used, but it was kind of every pound that a consumer spends is a vote for that company. And they, in this day and age, it's about a connection with that company. So that's the image that I want to put out as my business. You know, if you do work with me, I will have an open dialogue with you about the work that you want to achieve, about your projects, et cetera, et cetera. On the flip side to that, and I think I touched upon this in the focus group, I was having my website translated into French because I work a lot with French audiences. I haven't done it yet with Spanish, but actually that would be interesting. And my she's a friend, colleague who was translating my website for me. She received the original English and she said, I can't do a straightforward translation of this. I need to change it because for a French audience, you're going to come across as silly. You're not going to come across as professional. And that was really eye-opening for me and made me really aware. You know, I am a translator, so I work in this kind of arena all the time. But that kind of cultural perception had never occurred to me before. And so I have had to have advice from native French speakers about how I should be coming across in my communications. That's part of my brand as well. So I had to do kind of a double-sided thing. I have the English side of things and how I come across is, as I've come across on this podcast, I think that I will talk about anything and everything. I'm very chatty and warm. The French side of me has had to be toned down slightly. Make of that what you will. That might be sad. That might be just what you need to do to be a professional. It was just really fascinating feedback.
It's very important because when we talk about branding, there are a lot of misconceptions. And I don't want to go too long into this because there are going to be more episodes just purely on branding. But I think you touched on something very important. First of all, branding is not about creating a brand. So people sometimes come to me and say, okay, can you write my brand? No, I can't, because your brand is unique to you. What we do is to help you. I always use the word unpeeling. So we unpeel your brand. We try to really to get to the authentic part of you, the one that people connect with, because it's exactly like you say.
That's really interesting. Yeah.
That's why people connect with. And when people say, oh, but I'm B2B, not B2C, at the end of the day, people make decision with their gut, with their tummy. That's where the decision they might do all the research and everything, but at the end of the day, if they manage to connect with you on an authentic way, that is where the transaction, if you want, happens, and they choose you, but it's only if they connect with you. And you need to, I believe strongly in not creating brands, but really unpeeling brands, unpeeling the superpower that every one of us has, is just different for each one. And if we just pinpoint that superpower, we can leverage it. Now, when you say tone down your language, might be said. Now, I don't think he said the way it needs to be done, though, is like we talk about messaging and tone of voice and, you know, the way you portray your brand. That's the second part. So you do the brand strategy and then you do your visual and look and feel and sound, because we do also sound also for corporate identity. Now, in that sense, yes, of course, you have different audiences and you need to be aware of how they perceive you. So branding effectively is, you know, try to optimizing the perception people have. But that, as long as you stay authentic, is not sad. It's just being smart. I mean, if you go to a wedding, you're not going to go in jeans and, you know, crop. It's not sad. It's just that the setting.
No, it
calls for a different.
It's true. No, it's true. And there are ways. I think that's why it's so important to have someone like yourself, or, you know, a trusted person that you can have those honest conversations with about maintaining you. Even though, yes, as you said, you might need to alter your tone of voice slightly, or how you come across, but how you're able to remain authentic.
And that's important. It's critical. Like anybody that try to fake their personal brand, they might get away for a little while, but at the end of the day, if you're not yourself, yourself will struggle. If you have to force yourself all the time to be different, if toning down your bubbling personality will make you become a very dull and, you know, plain person, you will hate it. You will not be able to sustain it. So adjust. No. Change the clothes is one thing, you know, adjust the clothes to the occasion is one thing. Change your inside is not okay. And that is a very important point.
It's like everywhere in life, you know, we don't all make friends with every person that we meet in every interaction that we have. There will be people that don't warm to you. I'm going to say not don't like you, that's too strong, but they don't get what they want from you, but vice versa. You know, I've very politely decided not to work with certain potential clients because I don't feel like I gel with them. And I'm absolutely sure that happens the other way around, whether it's in French or English or any other sphere, it's going to happen, and that's okay.
And that's absolutely okay. That's what I say to my clients. We talk about negative personas. I will do an episode. I must put an episode of buyer persona, which is your ideal client. And you have the negative one. So the one that in theory, they are absolutely spot on for what you want to do. But there is something that makes them unsuitable for you. And there is no point in trying to pursue them, because you are not going to be happy. They're not going to be happy. It's going to be one of those cases where you end up with a bad experience.
Oh, for both there of will you. Be something. Like and you said, you have to listen to your gut. It is a gut thing.
Both ways. Another tip for the freelancer, don't take any job just because you need it. Now, to conclude very briefly, can you tell us, because again, we're always about brand here, what is a brand company that you like and why?
Annie. So as an intro to that, we recently adopted a dog earlier this year.
So cute.
He is my pride and joy. He is my baby. So it would have to be to do with kind of dog and pet things, my favorite brand. I have two favorite ones. They're both here in Portugal, actually. I love living here in Portugal, but sometimes the kind of customer service, the branding, I would say it's not quite caught up yet with certain other areas of Europe. But two brands that I feel do what they do exceptionally well are a company called Barkin. So it's Bark, then YN, Barkin. And another one, a Lisbon-based pet wear company called Malu. So my dog is called Melu. They're called Malu. So it is different. And I don't have any shares in it, unfortunately. But they, so Barkin is a pet food supplier. everything about them, from their actual branding. It's so colourful and just joyful. I just find it really joyful. But I've also, they also kind of throw in a free gift every time you order from them with the pet food, which is just a nice touch. It probably doesn't cost them anything at all, and often they'll do a handwritten note in there thanking you for ordering from them. I had to, that one of the deliveries didn't come when it should have done. I got in touch with them. Within seconds, I had a response back apologizing, saying that they would look into it. You know, it was a named person that I was speaking to. It's all those sorts of things that really matter to me, that kind of one-to-one contact and not being just kind of a number, you know, you are reference number this, you are, you know, yeah. it's that personal interaction. And with Malu, the pet wear store, it's really similar there. The two owners are a couple, and they are always in touch with you if you need to speak to them about anything. Our dog is a weird shape, and so I was looking for a harness for him. I got in touch to ask which size they could do for him, and she said that they don't have a size that would fit him, but they would make one specifically for him, bespoke for him, for the same price as just buying one from the online store. How amazing is that?
Wow.
I'm probably, you know, I'm not in that area at all. It probably didn't take very long for them to do it, but it meant so much to me as a customer, and that they'd really taken my needs and my dog's needs into account. So it's that personal relationship for me that really matters.
Is the connection? Which
means it can. It is. It's absolutely connection.
And it's branding, because what I always say is branding is not just about the logo. Is really, at the end of the day, is all the experience that people have when they interact with you.
It is.
And and I love these examples, because it really makes a difference. If you had to choose a pet store over another one, of course you're gonna go to that one, because it's the one that actually listened to you, that actually cared about you. Why would you go for someone, even if the other one is cheaper? You're not gonna go to the other one.
No,
because
absolutely.
You're not looking for a cheap experience, you're looking for the best experience.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Thank you so much, Hayley. It has been fantastic talking with you.
Thank you, Julie.